2 years ago today, a Minneapolis resident, George Floyd, was murdered by a police officer, setting off protests around the globe against police violence toward black people and other marginalized groups. Here's then candidate Joe Biden's address to the nation in 2020, a few days later.
Looking ahead in the first 100 days of my presidency, I've committed to creating a National Police Oversight Commission. I've long believed we need real community policing. We need each and every police department of the country to understand a comprehensive review of their — undertake a comprehensive review of their hiring, their training, their de-escalation. Some have already done it. Some have, are in the process of doing it. The federal government should give the cities and states the tools and the resources they need to implement reforms. More police officers meet the higher standards of their profession. Most of them do it. All the more reason why bad cops should be dealt with severely and swiftly.
Two pieces of news came out this week on the topic. A new executive order from the Biden administration on the use of force by federal agents with guidance for local departments, and a Justice Department mandate that federal officers should intervene if they see excessive use of force from other law enforcement officers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on what's changed, what hasn't changed over the last 2 years? What kind of changes would you like to see still? Do you have questions about what we're hearing from the Biden administration this week? Do you work in law enforcement? Has anything changed in your department over the last couple of years? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Reverend David Cooper joins us now. He served 33 years as a police officer, 21 of those as Madison's chief of police. After his retirement, he was ordained as a priest in the Episcopal Church. He's the author of the book Arrested Development, The Colors That Divide Us, about race and police reform. He has a blog called Improving Police. Reverend Cooper, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Always nice to be on public radio.
Before we get into some of the specifics from the Biden administration, have you seen significant changes in the way policing is done in the last couple of years since the death of George Floyd?
Well, I think probably most white people would say, oh yeah, there must be a lot of changes going on. But I think sort of the proof of the pudding here is, you know, how do people of color, you know, see what's happened the last 2 years? And if I'm to be fair, I think I have to look at, there's been a lot of talk. People mean well, and I'm sure the president does. I'm sure every public official. I think the city council of Minneapolis and Mayor Fry certainly speaks very strongly about the need for improvement. And I think it's we're talking about a transformation, and anything we're talking about is going to take this entire nation getting behind some very strong principles and saying, this is the kind of police that we want in our democracy, and we have to make those changes. And it's going to take 20 years. It took me 20 years in Madison. It's going to take any system, probably a good, well, I'll be fair. We probably made some changes significant after 8 years. It takes time. It takes leadership. It takes people committed to really be strong values about what this country is and our values about people.
We have from the Biden administration an executive order today. It's going to require federal agencies to change, revise their use of force policies, give incentives to local departments to do that with use of force, especially when officers intentionally use potentially deadly force. What's our current state of affairs? What do you think needs to change?
Well, you know, it's very nice that we have this from the Attorney General. I'm sure everybody means well. All the things that we've talked about in the last 2 years since George Floyd was so brutally murdered on the streets of Minneapolis has been done in one way or another by progressive police departments 40, 50 years ago. This is not new. The Madison Police Department has, since the early 1970s, had a policy that we implemented, said that officers are responsible to step in if they see bad behavior, illegal behavior, policy violations from their fellow officers. We also prohibited the shooting at fleeing motor vehicles and had a procedure to stop high-speed chases that were just getting too dangerous. This is about chokeholds. We decided that we are going to prohibit those in those early days as well. So for someone who has, you know, been in policing for since 1960 and has watched the field and kept an eye on what's going on, and the kind of commitment that I have both as a police officer and a priest to see justice in this country, it is amazing that that this has not been, you know, standard practice. So even the executive order from the Attorney General talks about officers' duty to intervene, any officer. Well, I think there needs to be a definition. Is the Attorney General talking about federal police officers, Secret Service, FBI, Bureau of ATF? Are those, does it just mean within those federal officers, or are we going to expect federal officers who are at a scene of, say, a demonstration to step in when police officers are using force illegally against a crowd of protesters? That's going to be a very interesting situation if that's what he means.
Talking to Reverend David Cooper, former Madison chief of police for over 20 years, looking at policing in America over the last 2 years since the death of George Floyd. You can join in with your thoughts, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Reverend Cooper, we've talked in the past and you've written a lot about the role of a police officer, the mentality they do their job with, and that's trained into them. Is it guardian or is it warrior? And you worry that it's slipped from guardian to warrior. Can you talk about that distinction?
Absolutely. That's been a visible shift probably since 9/11. I think there's been significant shift. There's been a lot of outside trainers going around the country. In fact, there's even a course that many police officers in the country have taken called Killology. And it is outrageous that this is the kind of training that taxpayers are paying for their police to have. We also, you know, I've been arguing for quite a few years now that we take the European Union standard of deadly force use, and I see that word was not used. I think the Attorney General talks about use force when necessary. The EU standard, and all EU nations must sign on to this, is that the use of deadly force can only be when it is an absolute necessity. Absolute necessity. And I think that's got to be the standard. It certainly involves de-escalation. It certainly involves police officers being better trained as good mental health workers on the street, because you can't be an urban police officer, well, any police officer almost in any town and city, and not really have a part of your job is to be a mental health officer, because a lot of the people in which you're contacting and having interactions with are suffering from mental illness. And I think that's a very, very important part of the job. And to sort of shift this work now, say, okay, now police don't know how to do that very well, so we're going to have mental health workers coming into the situation where we would normally send police. And then certainly goes through my mind is, you know, a lot of people are armed today. We certainly know that all too well. And once they have run into a mentally ill person with a gun, they're going to have to call the police. So I think the job of a police officer is to be a mental health worker as well. And I've always had a high belief in the importance of police to be sort of a social glue in our society. Well-trained police officers who are educated, have high emotional intelligence, are continually trained, led by mature leaders, are respectful to everyone they come in contact with, and are willing to work with community members in solving the problems that community members identify as important in their communities. That is possible. I think we have done that in Madison. I think that that it is a goal that's attainable. Nobody wants to be a police officer today. They didn't when I was hiring in the 60s and 70s as well. One of the things we talked about is, come, we're going to be a domestic peace corps. And you don't like the police? Well, join us. Join us and help us change, because nobody outside can change the police. And that is a very, very true maxim. You can't change the police from the outside. The police have to want to change.
Reverend David Cooper is with us, retired police officer, including 21 years as Madison's chief of police. You can join the conversation about policing in America over the last 2 years since the death of George Floyd. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Do you want to see changes in police training, in transparency? Does the lead have to come from the federal government, or do you see hope for positive changes at the local level? What questions do you have for a guest about the changes he's calling for? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Reverend David Cooper, retired police officer, former chief of police in Madison, author of the book Arrested Development, about policing reform. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Steve is with us in New Glarus. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, I just wanted to mention it. I was a Chicago police officer, and I worked an all-black district, and my partner was black. His first name was Tim. That's the only name I'm going to give you. But he was 7 feet tall and weighed over 300 pounds, and I felt pretty safe working a two-man car with him. He was, I'm sure, kept me going for quite a while. But he walked in. He was off duty, and he walked into a bar down the block from where he lived. He walked into the bar, and it was an all black neighborhood. And the people in the bar were all black. And the one guy in the bar pulled out a gun and shot and killed my partner. He said, "That's what you get for working for Whitey." And I just wanted to say, you know, you would think after all these years, I mean, I'm 77 years old now. We're talking about something that happened 50 years ago. We haven't gotten any better. We haven't developed. We haven't grown any better. We're still just, I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Steve, thank you for sharing your story. I'm sorry about the loss of your partner. I can tell you're still feeling it today. Reverend Cooper, Steve feels like the divide, the suspicion, I think, between police and black communities, not any better than when he was a cop.
Yeah, I think he's right. I think he's very right. And it's a sad commentary for those of us who have sort of, you know, watched this field and have served in this field. I certainly felt that when I retired in the 1990s, that the die was cast and that we as a nation would continue to improve. But I think right now, but there's one positive thing I think coming out as Assistant Attorney General Gupta. She said that that there's and I'm going to do some research on this. I just found out this just. Earlier today, that there's having a knowledge lab and that they're trying to develop best practices in the police field, which I think is really good. But we're also talking about 18,000 separate police agencies in 50 states and about 600,000 police officers with all kinds of variations in standards for their hiring. It is seemingly an insurmountable problem, even when we were sort of willing to dialogue between left and right in this country. Now that everyone has sort of run to the side that either the police are all bad or the police are all good and leave them alone, they're just doing their job, we never will have that dialogue that I think is so essential in the middle to try to come to some agreement as to, you know, what are the, you know, the standards and conditions and training, and what are the kind of people we want? And I used to, in fact, I noted this, I think in my book, I talked about, we had a citizens panel interviewing a number of police officers over the years, sort of kind of a final approval of having the community involved and not just the government officials in selecting police. And I remember one person on the panel saying, well, Chief, you know, what are you looking for? What kind of person do you want in the police department? And the story I gave them was this. I said, imagine your teenage daughter has 2 hours late coming home, and you're up, you and your wife are up and worried about this, and maybe thinking about, well, should we call the police? And all of a sudden, she's knocking at the door. She comes in, she's crying. She's been beaten up. Now, what kind of person do you want to come into your home, in your living room, and try to sort this out and help find out what's happened to her? That's the kind of police officer that I think this country needs. And I think we've got a lot of them out there. They're very reluctant to speak up because the subculture in which police work is overpowering. It changes people. It's difficult to go up against what you think is the stream. But the reality is there's more good cops out there than there's bad cops. And Derek Chauvin was a bad cop, and there's not a whole bunch of bad cops like that in Minneapolis. I worked there for 7 years when I started my career. But what there is a lot of other police officers that will not stand up and challenge, you know, a senior opinion leader like Derek Chauvin within a police department. They simply won't do it. Call it survival. It just doesn't happen very often.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jim is with us on the road near Madison. Jim, hi.
Good afternoon.
What did you want to tell us about, Jim?
Well, I could probably agree with some of the things the gentleman is commenting on. Some of it I don't. But just to give you some perspective from my point of view, I spent 38 years in law enforcement. 31 of those years, I was a street police officer in a major metropolitan city in the Midwest, a big city that is having many problems today. The last years of my career, of that 38 years, I spent specifically working in police training. In that period of time, I did find, from my perspective, a lot of problems with the methodology, the new methodology in police training. Most of it was good, but some of it was bad. And what I would refer to as far as use of force is concerned, a lot of the technological aspects of the training, the shoot, don't shoot stuff and all that kind of stuff, I did not agree with, and I made it known to my superiors, fell on deaf ears. And I think in a lot of big organizations, the institutional thinking is the ideas from the bottom never get to the top. There's this kind of, you know, pecking order kind of thing. And the gentleman making the comments there, he made the references that there's institutional thinking where, you know, you've got people that kind of set the tone of things and the other people are afraid to comment on it. I didn't find that to be the case much. It did in some areas. But, you know, what I think is happening today also is that the police departments are getting beat up constantly. Okay, they're getting beat up in the media. They're getting beat up by civic organizations and all these other entities on the outside. So it creates that circle of wagons mentality within police organizations. Also, I will say...
I'm going to jump in, Jim, because we don't have too much time left, and you gave us a lot to talk about there. Reverend Cooper, you've written that you're hoping to see not such, I think, correct me if I'm not paraphrasing you right, not such a confrontational approach, you know, community against police, federal government consent decrees against a department, more of a collaborative approach so that, as Jim says, we don't circle the wagons so much. Can you talk about how to do that?
I'd be interested in him identifying what he doesn't agree with what I said. That would be interesting to see that we may have had careers around parallel times, some overlapping there. I'm probably a little older than he is, but you know, what is it that Jim thinks that should not be done here, that we're barking up the wrong tree? I'd be interested. Changes in use of force policies, what about, getting a hold of guns? You know, there's some way that we can, regulate guns like we have automobiles. Is there some way we can have smart weapons? There's technology out there that'll prevent a person from firing a firearm that isn't his or her own. Some of that is going to have to be done because there's far too many guns on the street. And I would put it right out there. There's too many guns out there, and guns kill cops, and cops should be very much involved in trying to regulate the number of guns that are out there and who's carrying them. That's an important part. How many children do we get shot in school? I'm sick and tired of it, and most everyone is. Let's do something.
Jim, thanks for that call. Reverend Cooper, in just our last few moments, do you have any optimism that more departments are going to make some of the changes that you've been hoping for?
Well, my faith tells me to have hope, that as a person of faith, I will always have hope. As a former police leader watching the field for all these years and watching what's gone on since 2020, I will have to say that I am very, very worried that we will not be able to, in the near future, make the necessary change to have police officers who are then respected by the communities they serve and supported by them. Because a police officer in America cannot do his or her job without having trust and support from the community. It is impossible. That's how you turn into a warrior, where the objective is to use fear and intimidation.
And that's
good policing involves community.
That's where we'll leave it. Thanks to Reverend David Cooper, retired police officer, former Madison chief of police for over two decades, author of the book Arrested Development, The Colors That Divide Us.